And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
What's good, everybody? Pete and Nick back with you, NHL Fantasy on Ice, Keeper and Dynasty Rankings Edition. Nick, we're getting to the tail end of the 2022 season and looking forward not only to playoff pools, but of course, next season, regular season pools and everything along those lines. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Yes, I'm pumped just like you. And for somebody like me who's done my fantasy playoffs, I'm already looking forward to next season. And Pete, today we got the perfect guest.
Definitely. Cam Robinson, elite prospects, one of the best in the business for sure, especially at actually scouting these players over the years and prognosticating what they can do at the NHL level, either in their first chance or over the first two or three seasons of their career. So what's going on, Cam? It's been a minute, but great to have you on, man.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys having me and looking forward to chatting and appreciate the kind words too.
So we've seen so many prospects here enter the NHL ranks over the course of the season, but of course, you know, the past couple of weeks with Beniers and Power and everybody in that new wave of prospects in the NHL, which guy has impressed you the most? It's probably going to be Beniers based on what I've seen, but, you know, wanted to get your take on the immediate impact because it's been far reaching so far across the league.
Yeah, absolutely. It has. And, you know, opportunity is the hell of a drug, and he's stepped into Seattle and they put him in a spot to succeed. And lo and behold, he's succeeding. You know, I've always liked Matty Beniers' game. I had him ranked very highly in his draft class. He looked kind of that everything center for a team and kind of a nice hole to plug immediately for the crack in there in their first draft. And, you know, he had another great season at Michigan and he's stepping right in. And like I said, he's been given an opportunity to, you know, center a top line and get on that top power play unit. And he's putting the points in. And I don't really see a reason why that won't continue and he'll continue to elevate as the seasons wear on. Now, you know, I haven't ever really pegged him as being an elite offensive producer. I kind of expect him to be more in the mold of a Dylan Larkin, who, you know, as we see this season, he can go off for a point a game. He's done that in the past as well. And I think that that's where we're probably looking at Matty Beniers. We're not going to get maybe a 100-point season out of him. But the issue will be is that is he going to be surrounded with enough talent in Seattle to really kind of push that needle up in a hurry here in his, you know, in his official rookie season next year. So that's what I'm going to be looking for is, you know, the Kraken have a lot of money. How are they going to insulate him moving forward?
It's sort of funny, you know, Matty Beniers walks in the door and all of a sudden the first 3-game win streak in Seattle Kraken franchise history. First and foremost, Cammy, great to get a fellow Canuck here on the pod. So welcome. I got to ask you off the bat, there's about a week and a half remaining in this NHL regular season. Who is your Calder winner, Cam?
I'm giving it to Mo Sider. I think he's been tremendous playing a position that, you know, I'm not going to say it's easy to put up points, but it's a little bit easier to put up points when you're playing with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, or, you know, where you're Lucas Raymond and you're getting all that top power play unit time and you're getting an action next to Dylan Larkin and things like that. There's opportunities. You know, Matt Boldy's been terrific. I think that if he played a full season, he'd be right in the mix for that top spot too. But again, he's getting time on the first power play unit in Minnesota. What Moritz Seider has done to step into the league, to play just so well defensively, so physical, and then the offense is translated so quickly. So he's a player that when he was draft eligible, you know, I kind of said that he was this raw piece of clay just waiting to be molded and that he had that elite upside, but it was a matter of, could he put it all together and how long would it take? Well, it didn't take very long. And Detroit has done a masterful job with him, getting him into there. And then again, just like Beniers, putting him into situations to succeed. So for my money, it's Mo Sider. You know, if we're talking fantasy rookie of the year, then, you know, that debate kind of gets wide open. But for real life, for me, it's Sider.
Definitely. It would include Michael Bunting, no doubt, if you were to say fantasy rookie. But also Sider, I wonder what his ceiling is after what we've seen with the sample size and with the team being a non-contender and him still being able to finish around top 100 overall in standard leagues. Like, to me, I see a future for Sider being like, I keep comparing him because he has the size like to a Victor Hedman, but he's even more physical than Hedman. So does that mean that Sider maybe a couple of years down the line could be considered one of, if not the best defenseman in the entire league? You think the ceiling is that high, Cam?
I absolutely do. Like he's out played what Hedman did when he was a young player, demonstrably so. It took Hedman a minute to kind of get there. And it often takes these bigger players longer to get there too, you know, especially on the back end. So what he has done, you know, he's going to end up putting up a 50-point season as a rookie here. And that's with him. You know, he shoots the puck well. He's got over two shots per game this season, but he's only clicking at around 3%. So I think that there's room for that to go up as well. So we're going to see some more goal scoring from him. You know, obviously the hope is that Detroit is, like Seattle is, hopefully they're going to get more an influx of talent coming in there. And so that, you know, he's just going to have more and more pieces to work with on that top power play unit at even strength. There's little reason to believe that he's not going to chew up all the minutes, all the fun minutes there in Detroit, and, you know, can push for 30 power play points and really drive play at even strength as well. So yeah, I mean, 60, 65, maybe even 70 point upside for him on the blue line. And with that, just like devastating physical nature that he can bring, the blocks, the hits. And so Multicat, you know, he's a monster already. And then judging long-term is that I think even in points only leagues that he's going to be a star, and he already is a stud right now, but I think that the sky's the limit for him.
I want to see Detroit surround him a bit better on the back end, and that'll come over the progression of this organization. Let's talk about the 23-24 Calder winner. His name is Connor Bedard. For those who are unaware of this player, there is another Connor coming, and this dude's insane. I get jacked up reading your tweets on a daily basis about this guy. You know, give the listeners, the, you know, everybody watching as well, just a general background of Connor Bedard and how hyped we should be in the fantasy world too.
Yeah, decent player, that Connor Bedard. He's, excuse me, you know, so he was the first exceptional status kid in the WHL. And then last year, you know, basically, I think he had 22, 24 games because of the COVID shutdown, and they were in a bubble. But, you know, his production level at that was insane. But we kind of had to put the asterisks on it because he wasn't traveling and just the different circumstances. But he stepped in this year, and, you know, for him, it was a bit of a slow start. Through the first 16 games, I think he had about 8 goals, which is still half a goal a game, which is nuts for a 16-year-old in junior, but only, you know, around 20 points. Then there was a coaching change in Regina, and he's taken off since that point. So I think he's been hovering a little over 2 points a game down the back, you know, 50 games of the season, 45 games of the season. Again, just unheard of production. You compare him to what Connor McDavid did in his 16-year-old season in the OHL. He outpointed him by one in a few more games, but he outscored him by 25 goals nearly. So this kid isn't Connor McDavid. He doesn't own that electric kind of otherworldly speed, but he processes the game at the same level. His hands are at the same level. His shot is demonstrably better than McDavid's was at that same time. I don't think that there's any reason to expect him to not make the NHL as a rookie and push for a point a game. Like, he's a 5'9" center, which is, you know, they're going to key in on him and they're going to try to run him physically and work him over. But he is so, so talented. He's so smart. He's so highly adapted at his game, and he's a good skater. He's just not maybe McDavid level, that he's a superstar, a generational talent that's going to be coming in for 2023. So, you know, people in fantasy leagues that maybe are looking at next season not being their year to compete for a title, like, go ahead and sell the farm to get as many 23 first round picks as you can get. I got a buddy in my main keeper league who's been pilfering them off for a couple of years now. I think he's got 4 or 5, and he's just white knuckling them, and he's never letting them go because he wants a piece of that. And, you know, the fun thing too is that if you don't get first overall, Matvey Mishkov is coming too, who's a Russian kid who looks like he could score 50, maybe even 60 goals in the NHL too, just a dynamic finisher. So this next crop of talent coming up in 23 is high, high value, much higher than this 22 class.
So fun to talk to you, Cam, before and then after the draft, because then we'll know where these guys are going. And of course, I remember last time we talked, it was a couple of years ago, and Jack Hughes was the topic of discussion, and it's happened a couple of years later. But my goodness, what a season Jack Hughes had this year. That has to be a short list of guys that are better than Jack Hughes in keeper and dynasty formats. And it's finally starting to materialize, like I remember you thought it would. A lot of us thought it would happen last year, but better late than never, right? I mean, he's top 10 in keeper and dynasty leagues, almost without debate, right?
Oh, without question. And you know, it's one of those things is that, you know, historically we used to give players a ton of time, right? Even the first overall picks, you'd give them some breath. And nowadays is that we're seeing that useful influx of talent stepping into the league and just taking off right away. And so you come to expect it, especially for these guys in the pole position, you know, Lafreniere or even Byfield, you know, the top two guys. And then, you know, takes Jack Hughes a couple seasons to really take off. And then people start to question, like, oh, is he actually that good? You know, we're hearing the same whispers about Lafreniere, but, you know, you give these guys a minute And all of a sudden they get confident, they get comfortable, they get the trust of their coaches and they get the minutes, and then things just start to take off. And so they're so smart on the ice. Jack Hughes is so, so talented, highly, highly talented. Is that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he scores 40 goals and pushes for 110 points next season. Like, he's that good right now. And because, you know, we do see these younger players really take off soon, and their prime windows has kind of shrunk down. It used to be in that kind of 26 to 29 range. Now we're looking at like 21 to 25 is usually the peak performance and peak output from these players. So I do expect him to just have a monster run over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons. Again, New Jersey, they have a lot of talent coming up already that's in there on their club, and they got Alexander Holtz coming. They're going to get another high pick. I think New Jersey is kind of a sleeping giant for fantasy right now.
Two words, John Gibson. I think he's going to be a big piece this summer. And if the Devils are serious about contending, find me a goalie, man. I can't watch that team anymore. But a name you brought up that really intrigued me, Alexis Lafreniere. And Pete, we can start with you. Where are you at in the progression of Alexis Lafreniere? Because obviously a highly touted pick, but then you got to throw in the aspect of COVID and all of that. And sometimes takes, as Cam just mentioned, prospects a bit longer. So where do you stand, Pete, the New York Rangers and Alexis Lafreniere and his progression right now, guys?
I mean, I was really impressed by that between the legs goal the other day.
Not bad.
Like Cam was saying, like, give this guy some time, give him a full season in a top six role eventually, and I think we'll see him start to blossom. The problem with the Rangers, and when they re-sign Chris Kreider, and it's not a problem because Chris Kreider is a power play goal machine and one of the best full-fledged breakout players of the season this year, but with Kreider and Panarin and Lafreniere, right? Cam, you just have a crowded outlook at the left wing position. So that's one thing that has hindered him to this point. I don't know that it's going to change all that much moving forward, but I do know that Lafreniere will eventually be a guy that's playing in the top six, maybe at right wing and also on the first power play for New York, and will eventually give them a higher ceiling. Curious to hear your thoughts, Cam.
Yeah, I trust the talent on Lafreniere, and you're right, though. It is, he's blocked up on the left side there, and you know, historically he hasn't been as good, as comfortable on the right wing. And so, you know, if it was me, I mean, it's tough to move a 50 goal scorer out of his position too, but you know, Kreider's a veteran, right? That I would look to shift him over and get Lafreniere up on that top line on the left wing. But here's my hot take, is that I see a world where he doesn't end up playing on the first line for the Rangers. He ends up playing on the first line somewhere else. Ooh. Is that I think that this New York team, they have a lot of talent. They got a lot of options. They have some cap flexibility in the short term. Is that we could see them make something big happen this year. And, you know, I think they would probably prefer to move a guy like Kaapo Kakko out because he's a little bit lower on the pecking order there than Lafreniere, but you're not going to pull back as much in return. So if they want to make a big, big splash, you know, do they go out and try to trade for Patty Kane for the Twilight, you know, sort of thing. And maybe the Blackhawks eat some salary there to make it work. And they move on Lafreniere. You know, there's rumors, JT Miller out of Vancouver, that the Rangers are highly, highly interested, you know, with 1 year left on his deal, that's probably not going to happen, but maybe it does with an extension or some added pieces. So I think that there's, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but I think that there's a chance, just because of situationally and how it's kind of built out for them right now, is that they're a team built to win right now. They don't have a spot for him in their top six at the moment. Maybe he's a trade piece.
It's funny you say that, because even around the deadline, how quickly they kiboshed the rumors of Alexis Lafreniere being available. And my good buddy, Dave Pagnotta, the fourth period, put it out there. And like 2 seconds later, it was out in the news that no, he's not available, which makes me start to wonder a bit. I think Montreal would be clearly involved in that conversation too. May 10th, the draft lottery. We can't wait for that. The fight for right, guys, as you know, is fully on. I mean, some of these teams haven't won in like a decade, it seems, more so like 10 games. But what's your expectations? I know it's expected Shane Wright can go first overall. Is that a foregone conclusion, Cam, or could we see somebody push here for that number one overall? And then on top of that, what's your expectation for a couple of these guys off the bat?
Yeah, I think that safe money is Shane Wright's going first overall. And we've kind of got into this habit in the scouting community of when a player's been on the radar as someone who's likely going to go very, very high, is that they start to get nitpicked a little bit. And so in the case of Shane Wright, is that, you know, he was exceptional 2 years ago. In his first OHL season, like, he outscored McDavid at the same age. And then he lost his entire draft minus 1 year, which is like, at that stage of development, like, that is that's a crucial time period for these kids. And so all of a sudden the season started and he's playing at a point of game a little bit over. He's still, you know, doing his nuanced defensive thing and plays down the middle of the ice and he's smart and all that. But people start to question, you know, like, hey, a point of game season, that's not first overall levels. Well, as the season's worn on, he's gotten comfortable again. You know, you get back into the rhythm of playing every 2 or 3 days. You know, he is far and away leading all draft eligibles in the CHL for points and points per game. Healthy margin. And then, like I mentioned, like he's very, very strong defensively. He's smart. He has this like funky release that he can use too, that instead of like downward force, he like kind of has an angle force on his shot that lets him get things off really quick and in traffic. And I think that's, it's one of the more creative ways to release it and score. And I think that's something that's, it's a stackable skill. It's translatable. He's a player that I think has 30 goal upside of the NHL, has point of game upside of the NHL, you know, could end up being like, you know, in the Selke conversation one day. So he's going to be a very, very good real life player. And so, you know, at the center ice position, I think that it's going to be pretty close to a layup for a team who gets there. You know, all it takes is one team to get funky, someone to really like Logan Cooley, who's had a really strong season, another center iceman, plays a little more high pace, plays with a little more skill, lower floor. There's a kid, Simon Nemec, a right shot defenseman coming out of Slovakia, who's had a terrific season, especially in the back half. He set all sorts of records in the Tipos Extra League over there for most points by a defenseman under 21. You know, he's 17, just turned 18. He's just set a record for most points in the playoffs, leading his club to the finals that he's in right now. I love Simon Nemec. He's been number 2 on my board all season long. I think that he could make a claim for that first overall pick, but in my mind that those guys are kind of, you know, that's you're looking at your three of your top five. You're off Slafkowski. We saw him just take off at the Olympics and kind of set the world on fire. Another Slovak kid having a strong year in the Finnish Liga. I think he's third all time now in playoff points in a season. His team's in the finals as well, TPS. So there's a lot of fun kids this year. Not a lot of superstars though. So the 2022 crop here is that teams are kind of failing to get down there for Shane Wright. And if you don't get him, you don't have a slam dunk first pair defenseman or first line forward. You have guys that could definitely get there, but there are some question marks, which breeds kind of that flexibility with teams. You might see someone go off the board a little bit earlier and swing on a kid like Frank Nazar because his skill is so high. But if he doesn't break right, you know, you've got yourself maybe a third liner or something like that. But if he does, you could have a star. So it's going to be a really interesting crop for that one. And, you know, in fantasy circles, it's not as good as the 23 class where, you know, if you get a top five pick, you're probably walking into a star in a couple of years. Here, you're going to have to be a little more creative.
It's interesting to look at Arizona because at the bottom of the standings this season, I mean, they don't have like a full-fledged rebuild where they have a number of amazing pieces, but I feel like that's one team that's usually at the bottom of the standings that would really benefit from acquiring an impact player. I mean, what's your pulse on the Coyotes? I know they're moving to the smaller arena next year where they're going to have, you know, higher demand for their tickets, but as their organization kind of evolves, what are your hopes for the Coyotes this particular draft?
Oh gosh, they're a tough one to get a read on these days. It's you know, the all the rumors that they are very eager to move Jacob Chychrun, you know, a young, very, very good defenseman. You know, usually a rebuilding team will just hold on tight to those guys and not be interested. But, you know, obviously their asking price was extremely high. And we'll see if they go down that path again at the draft when more teams are, you know, in the mix to kind of acquire a player like that. They're kind of going scorched earth, I think. And so, yes, they're going to want more picks, more prospects, build out with a cheap team, right? You get a bunch of guys on those entry-level contracts that aren't making much money, and then you give them a bunch of playing time and you see which one kind of breaks right, and then they get paid. So they're going to get a high pick. Someone's going to end up there. They're going to be playing in front of 5,000 fans at ASU and it'll be an intimate setting. And then I'm sure they will be right at the bottom of the heap again for 23, because, you know, they know what's coming as well too, is that, you know, if you can be bad for another season, there's a ton coming there. And once you do that, then you can look, okay, now it's time to start adding some free agents, start building up. And, you know, hopefully that's what ownership does to kind of reward that fan base for its loyalty. And yeah, they, you know, they have some talent on their team, some guys that don't get a lot of publicity for it, but they're still skillful guys, you know, Nick Schmaltz, Clayton Keller, these are good players, right? So they have a couple of pieces right now, but they certainly need a lot more, and building through the draft is kind of their only option at this point.
Hey, don't forget they found value in Shane Gostisbehere too. Is that a rejuvenated season on the back end? I wanted to ask you as well about the Ottawa Senators. I think there's a lot of underappreciated files on that team, namely Josh Norris, Tim Stützle has really broken loose in the last, I would say, the second half of this season. You know, what will it take, I should say, for Ottawa to take that next step, in your opinion? Because Jake Sanderson's coming too, right?
Yeah, Jake Sanderson's going to be a heck of a real life player for them. So, you know, Thomas Chabot should continue to eat up the power play minutes, and Sanderson should come in and step in and take all the heavy minutes and kind of complement him really, really well. So they've got a nice piece coming there. And, you know, like you said, Josh Norris, I think he's a full fledged first line center, like all day. Like he's a heck of a player and doesn't get enough love. Brady Tkachuk, we've just been waiting. We've been waiting for Brady Tkachuk to break out. You know, he hits, he shoots, he can score, especially in tight. I want to see him be able to pick some corners and not hit the goalie in the crest all the time. but I think he has that gear ready. Still young. He's what, 22 years old, right? So he's still got a ton of growth left in his game. You mentioned Stützle has really exploded down the back half. I think he's, you know, got 25, 26 points in the last 20 odd games. So he's looking good. I think for them, they need to go out and get themselves another like clear top six winger. Whether that's, you know, they go out and trade for Kevin Fiala, who might have priced himself out of Minnesota as an RFA. You go sign Claude Giroux, who's from there and can, you know, bring that veteran presence. Go ahead and get yourself another goalie. You know, if we're talking about New Jersey, like I've liked some of the things that they've done there. Forsberg's done well, but I think that if you really want to do something, it's you need that. You need to let your young players know that if you make a mistake, it's not going to end up in the back of the net every time. Yeah, I think those are a couple of things, but again, I said it about New Jersey. I think they're something of a sleeping giant in fantasy. I'd say the same for the Senators, but it's they're not sleeping as much. Is that you see these guys like Alex Fermentin, blazing speed, and he can go off for chunks of time where he's a point of game player. Drake Batherson, right? Like he's a great player already. Again, just isn't a household name really around the league yet, but these are guys that they're growing together and they should be pretty formidable themselves if they can keep building it right.
Right. Batherson before his injury was like a top 50 overall player in standard fantasy leagues because of his hits coverage and his shots and everything along those lines, playing of course with Norris and Tkachuk. So that's a player that maybe would be worthy of like top 50 to 75 in a redraft league next season, but you might be able to get him even later just because Ottawa seems to be very underappreciated other than Brady Tkachuk in fantasy circles. Another team from that same division. I know we've mentioned Ottawa, we've mentioned Detroit, but what's your level of confidence in this Buffalo rebuild? Because I think we've seen some very pleasant surprises. Some of them are not surprises, and they got about, you know, 8 to 10 guys in our top 100 keeper rankings moving forward. So, you know, the Buffalo situation has come a long way in less than a season since they've traded Jack Eichel, right, Cam?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, you know, people were kind of a little down on that return, right? Like, oh, Alex Tuck, Peyton Krebs. Yeah, he's a good prospect. Well, I mean, like Alex Tuck looks like he's going to be the captain of that team. Like he's another one who has just been terrific on a team that doesn't have a ton of talent. And he's another one of these guys that a power forward that takes a little bit longer to get there. He would show it for flashes with the Golden Knights, you know, coming up with Mini Two, he was highly regarded. And now all of a sudden he's whatever, 24 years old, and he's starting to put it together. Tage Thompson, right? Like there's a terrific story, a really big guy who's really taken his time to get there. But now all of a sudden, like he looks so great on those two on the top line together. You need Peyton Krebs to hit. And I'm a big Peyton Krebs believer. I had him 7th overall in his class and he fell all the way to 17th because he had an Achilles injury. There was no reason other than the fact that teams don't like to draft a guy who comes up on stage with crutches for him to have been there at 17. So the Golden Knights made a great pick. And then the Sabres made a great target out of him when they traded Eichel. So they have some great pieces, obviously on the back end. It's the Rasmus Dahlin and the Owen Power show. And, you know, to have both those guys anchoring two of your pairs, you're going to be able to roll them out there for at least half the game, more, you know, 2/3 of the game, they're going to be on the ice. That's going to be huge. I have been so, so high on Rasmus Dahlin for years, you know, going back to when he was draft minus one player. I think that he's just coming out of his shell right now too. And, you know, Ralph Krueger didn't do him any favors there last season when he was coaching, is that he was holding back the reins on him, and now they're off. And, you know, he's still not terrific defensively, but that's okay because his offense is what they're really paying him to do, to transition the puck and to make hay on the power play. And I think that he's going to continue to do that. I know some people are a little worried with Powers coming in that he's going to steal some of the shine from Dahlin. I think it's going to be a similar thing with Sanderson and Chabot in Ottawa, is that Owen Power is going to be a excellent stopper at the NHL. He'll be a rookie next season, so there will be hiccups, but he's very, very strong defensively. He's going to get bigger, stronger, meaner. He's going to eat all those heavy minutes. Darlene's going to have some more of those fun minutes. And together, you know, you put them in the right spot. It was similar to what happened in Philadelphia years ago where Provorov, everyone thought he was going to come and take Ghost of Spare's cookie, and he didn't. It's like he was better to play the two-way game, and Ghost could play the offensive game. And we see this time and time again. And so I think Owen Power is still going to be able to drive play it at even strength and be a player who can put up 35, 40 points with secondary power play minutes, or maybe they end up both on the top power play, one on their offside. We'll see. I don't think that'll be the case, but I think it's Darlene's time to really step up and assert himself as one of the top, you know, five or six best power play defensemen in the league, pushing in that 60, 65 point range. The Sabres, it's been a long, grueling haul for them. You know, it feels like it's been a decade plus since they've really had anything to be happy about. And I think that the team that they should start to get excited is that another early pick coming. They've hit some, they've missed some over the years. It's time to hit another one and then take a step forward.
I just don't know who they're going to overtake in that Atlantic division. And yet the theme of this conversation, another team who could use an upgrade in between the pipes and maybe insulate UPL, who is the goalie of the future for sure there. Let's get to the Vancouver Canucks conversation. Vasily Podkolzin, as you know, has really, really taken off the last little while. And I think early, I didn't expect this quickly for this kid, but he's been an absolute stud. And what a run for Gabby Boudreaux and the Vancouver Canucks. I'm a believer in this team, and I do see a pathway where this team turns things around and makes a Stanley Cup playoffs as soon as next season, Cam.
Yeah, they've made it fun down the stretch here. Hey, like everyone had them written off. Obviously they're written off long before Boudreaux even came in when they looked like they were going to be contending for that first overall pick. And then to go on a run like this, and you know, they're going to come up short. I think that's pretty clear at this point now, but they put forth the effort and they've shown that the fans that they're capable, and they've shown ownership the same thing. I still think some changes are coming this summer. But, you know, with Podkolzin's evolution, I think you're absolutely right, is that, you know, this is the type of play the last month, 6 weeks that you were hoping to get in year three, not at the tail end of his rookie season. And so, again, opportunity, right? He finds himself up on in the top six, playing with JT Miller, getting looks on the top power play now that Bo Horvat's out. It's been a tough slug for him for the last few seasons, playing in the KHL and getting very limited opportunities. And so when you're a young player and you're an offensive player, and you're told that basically, like, you make a mistake and you're stapled to the bench, that kind of squashes your creativity and you become risk averse. And so I think that they've had to kind of pry him out of his shell a little bit. And you know, he had to, get acclimatized to the NHL there, and that's fine. Play him 10, 11 minutes a night. And now we're seeing 15, 16, 18 minutes a night. He's putting up points. He always had great hands and great vision. And now he's playing with players who can actually finish those plays off. I think it was Bo Horvat who said earlier in the season that this kid has the hardest shot on the team. And, you know, that's on a team that has Elias Pettersson blasting those one-timers in practice all day. So that, I think that's a pretty, pretty high compliment. And so, you know, if he goes out and scores 20, 25 goals next season, I wouldn't blink an eye. And I think that really changes the complexion of the team's top six. It allows them to go in the summer and look at, hey, you know, maybe Connor Garland is an expendable piece to go get a defenseman or to attach to get rid of one of these terrible defensive contracts that they have. You know, it kind of puts him in a funny position because of the JT Miller, all that talk is that it looked like this team was a couple of years away and that they needed to move on from him rather than paying him his bag. But it's like, maybe they're not. Maybe they are ready to legitimately push next season. They've got the core. You know, Thatcher Demko is one of the best goaltenders in the world. We've seen Pettersson down this back half, you know, prove once again that he is a superstar and that he should hopefully be able to do that for a full season next year. Bo Horvat scoring 30 goals. So this Canuck team is very, very interesting. The cupboards are bare. They don't have a ton of picks. So it's kind of like you go for it now, or you really have to take a big step back, move some big pieces. And I don't think ownership or the fan base has an appetite for that. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if they make that move, make a couple moves in the summer to kind of load up and then trust a guy like Podkolzin on his entry-level contract, elevate a guy like Nils Höglander up, to, you know, give him real third line minutes and second power play opportunity time to hopefully kind of get some production out of those cheaper players.
I mean, at least they could fall back on the fact that Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson are still two of the top 25 and under players in the NHL right now, according to our rankings. But I'm sure you would agree, Cam. And then, you know, when you're looking at some of the better teams out there who are, of course, contending for the Stanley Cup, like the Florida Panthers, Colorado Avalanche, and some of their young players, do you see in certain situations that because there are so many other elite players on those groups that it hinders their development at all or their ceiling in fantasy? Some names that come to mind, obviously amazing season at even strength for Anton Lundell this season in Florida, but maybe on the flip side, like a Bowen Byram, I just see him between the injuries and having Makar and Devontaeves in front of him, like it just kind of holds him back whenever he's healthy too, right?
Yeah, it's another Bowen Byron. He's had a tough go with those concussions for sure. But when he's been in the lineup, you know, he finds a way to produce with getting minimal power play time, just drive and play at even strength. So he's an excellent, excellent player and someone that's, it's kind of like a bonus for the Avs to have him. It's someone that they could look at as a trade piece to really bolster something on another run next year, or to kind of as that hedge in case they can't afford someone else on the blue line. They need to bring him up. And I you know, he's going to get the second power play opportunity time here. Like eventually he'll have that locked down, but on the Avalanche, you're right. It's going to keep his point totals muted. So unfortunately for Byram owners, while he's in Colorado, you're not going to see the high water big numbers. Conversely, another excellent player that they have, a young player, another one that they shouldn't really have so many good young players, is Alex Newhook, who I fully expect is going to take Nazem Kadri's spot as the number two center after he leaves in free agency, because he's priced himself out. It would be incredible if they could find a way to keep him on a cheaper, shorter term deal if he wants to come back and go for a cup or two. But I expect he leaves, and then it's going to be Newhook who steps into that spot. Whether or not Newhook gets that top power play gig that Kadri's had, that's another question, but I think that he's got the skill level. He's another player. He was in that same draft as Peyton Krebs. I had him 6th overall on my board, and he went 16 to Colorado. Another kid who just, there was no reason for him to be left alone for that long in the draft, and the Avs took advantage of it. So they're a really fortunate club that has so much talent, so much depth, and they've got the young players, and they've got picks. Like it's kind of gross, actually. But, you know, shifting gears to Florida there, you mentioned like Anton Lundell. Anton Lundell would be a first line center on many teams right now.
Yep.
And he's just never going to be able to take the bag from Sasha Barkov. Like that's going to take forever for him to really kind of peel those minutes away. And so we're going to be stuck with watching him get secondary offensive minutes, be tasked with defensive shutdown role, because he is very good at that as well too. And as he matures, he's going to be a heavier big body player. So again, it's going to hurt his fantasy. He's never going to probably put up 90, 95 points, but you know, he could be someone who can be driving at 70, 75 point pace and doing everything for the club. So just real life value through the roof. Fantasy takes a bit of hit, and that's just kind of how it goes. You never know what the future holds. Injuries happen, players step up into big roles, and they supersede the guy, and then that guy becomes expendable. Trades happen, so you know, you don't give up on these guys, but you know, when you're looking at short-term forecasts, it is harder for those players on these really, really deep teams, unless your name is Matt Boldy and you can just step into the wild and be handed the keys to the top power play, that it is harder for some of these guys to break out in a hurry.
Yeah, the Boldy splits are great, especially since he's been called up. Like Kevin Fiala has taken off, but I think, as you said earlier on, I think he's priced himself out of Minnesota. And for everybody listening too, like I think you have to shift your focus and mindset, especially if you're in a keeper league, and look ahead. As you mentioned, like Kadri leaving, who does that open the door for? And I think you have to think that way moving forward in fantasy hockey as it continues to evolve. With that in mind, my last question, Cam. You know, do you have any players currently on your radar as we head into the off season, moving forward in the next season, that you're thinking about, you know, a la like a Jack Hughes last year, where you're like, this guy could be ready for breakout city or something like that?
You know, we're just talking about Wild there. I think Kalen Addison is a player that, nice. You know, maybe he doesn't get the keys right away, you know, just because Jared Spurgeon has been, he's an excellent, excellent player, but he's not a power play quarterback. Like that isn't his game traditionally. And Minnesota needs one of those. And they have a homegrown one sitting right there in Kalen Addison. And he's been very, very good in the AHL for whatever 60, 70, 80 games he's played down there. Even coming up to the NHL in the handful of games, he's looked very competent. So he's a player that I think that the Wild have a lot of defensemen signed already for next season, and he doesn't have a locked in spot. I think that they make some moves. I think that they try to move out a guy like Matt Dumba, clear out that cap space. Maybe that helps them afford a Kevin Fiala to re-sign Fiala. And then, you know, they plug in Addison in that cheap entry-level contract, playing offensive minutes for you. He's the type of player I could see really breaking out next season. Another guy, Evan Bouchard. You know, he's I think one of the highest even strength scoring defensemen in his rookie season ever. I know it's not actually his rookie season, but it's just by a technicality. He is, I think, a better power play producer than Tyson Barrie will have been for the Oilers. He was excellent for the London Knights. He has the pedigree in the AHL as well. I think it's just a matter of getting those minutes on that top power play unit. And then finally, I'll talk one more defenseman since I'm going that way. I think Miro Heiskanen. I think John Klingberg's out the door in Dallas. We've been waiting forever for Heiskanen to take the ball. You know, that young core there, Jason Robertson, Rupe Hintz, and it's going to be Miro Heiskanen. And I think that, you know, he's been a guy that's kind of hovered around that 35, 40 point pace. He started to split power play time with Klingberg a little bit more, getting up to two and a half minutes. You give this guy three and a half minutes on the top power play with those young kids who are still growing. You know, I think Jason Robertson's a superstar, that he's another one that's going to be pushing 50, 55, even 60 points next season. So these are big jumps, outside of guys that are necessarily like, you know, Quentin Byfield, we're expecting him to take another jump next year and then a bigger jump the year after that. So those really high pedigree kids, I think, are easier to pinpoint out, but yeah, those are a few more that, that I think are coming.
I think we're all still waiting for that Haskinen 2020 postseason stats to translate exactly to a fantasy season over a full 82 games could make him one of the truly elite defensemen. So really good point there, Cam. And then I wanted to leave everybody with a goalie question. I mean, I think Spencer Knight is definitely turning the corner here at the end of the season with his winning streak. Florida can't lose a game now if they tried. But now Spencer Knight, I mean, do you view him as the best goalie option, like if we're talking 25 and under, because he's the highest ranked in our rankings, and I think with the team support that he has, the only thing really standing in his way is this Bobrovsky situation. And of course Bobrovsky has had a really solid season this year, has prevented him from becoming the number one starter, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's okay. You know, like he's 21. I think he just turned 21. So there's time. You know, we see the young guys are pushing in sooner, but in goal, it still trails behind a little bit. You're really looking at these guys at 22, 23, 24, even for the high end ones to really break out. We saw it with Demko. You know, UC Saros has been on the radar forever. And now, you know, he's really elevated into Vezina level tender. So Spencer Knight, you know, yeah, he has to battle the contract of Sergei Bobrovsky, and what that means to the organization is that they pay him so much money, it's hard to put him on the bench. But I got a hot take, is that I think Spencer Knight starts more games for the Panthers this spring than Bobrovsky does. I think going down the stretch, the last 15, 20 games, that it's been pretty clear who's been the better netminder. I think Spencer Knight's been cruising at like a 925 save percentage down to, in the last quarter, and or even better. And well, Spencer Knight's been under 900. So come playoff time, you know, Bobrovsky will be the game one starter, but there's little room for error. And I think that he's going to have a messy game, and I'm fully expecting Spencer Knight to take the ball, and I think he's going to run with it. He's a big game player. He's proven it in the past internationally at the college level. He's a heck of a guy, a heck of a player for the Panthers, and another one that's just a team that is spoiled with riches, and then they get themselves this like A+ goaltending prospect who's ready earlier than expected, and I think can really help generate for them. But you know what that means for next season, who knows, because I don't see Bobrovsky's contract being tradable at this point in time anyways. And so, you know, even if he does go on a nice run and kind of leads the Panthers deep, does that mean he's the locked in starter next year? No, probably not. He probably has to go and battle him again and do a 50-50 split and prove it once again. And that's going to kind of be the modus operandi in Florida for a little while.
I think you're bang on, not to mention Florida even had Devin Levi, who they made the Reinhardt deal with the Buffalo Sabres as well. So a lot to chew on. And I think you're correct. It's got Matt Murray written all over it, Cam. Excellent stuff. This has been phenomenal. Great intel, and appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's been fun. Thanks for having me on, fellas.
So thanks again to Cam Robinson. Follow him on Twitter at @hockey_Robinson. Director of Film Scouting and Lord of Fantasy Hockey at Elite Prospects, says his Twitter bio. I love it. And yeah, great insight there as always from him. So he was pretty high on Matt Boldy. I mean, he is the rookie leader this year in points per game, ahead of Zegras, ahead of Lindell, ahead of Bunting, the whole group. Do you view him, Nick, as a player that could end up being the best from this rookie class? Because as good as Bunting's been, you know that he's a product of his line mate. You know he's a little bit older. Yeah. We were talking about how Lindell's ceiling could be capped the next few years. So I just wonder if Boldy is maybe the guy that you could actually not only have on your fantasy roster down the stretch, but also really either consider keeping if you can keep 3 to 5 players in your fantasy league for next season.
Yeah, certainly a guy, Pete, that I've identified as a keeper moving forward in the next season. And again, as I talked about with Cam, like just the correlation with Kevin Fiala's breakout again this season, I think since early January when Boldy was recalled. And, you know, to that point, like the Wild need these type of players, especially with those two giant big buyouts and the money they're about to pay over, I believe, what, the next couple seasons. So you're going to need, you know, cheaper salary guys like Matt Boldy still on his ELC. And I think there's just so much value in this player in the top six moving forward. So certainly I've circled this guy, and he's been an under the radar type stud, like not much conversation. I know over All-Star weekend, Todd Furman was talking about Matt Boldy potentially getting in that conversation, you know, for the Calder Trophy. I think he's obviously going to fall a bit short, but he's been a tremendous story for what he's done since being called up, not to mention he's going to be in the Stanley Cup playoffs and a lot of eyes will finally see him on a national stage, right?
Oh, definitely. And while we're talking up Boldy, we're not dismissing guys like Caulfield and Zegras and what they're going to be able to do in the future. I'm sure that Cole Caulfield eventually, even if Montreal is in kind of like a quasi rebuild the next couple of years, I'm sure we'll get a 40 goal season from Cole Caulfield at some point in the future. And then Trevor Zegras, I wonder what his ceiling is going to be. Cause you were mentioning, like, I mean, they have Drysdale, they have Gibson right now, but Gibson's kind of in this no man's land in terms of fantasy upside and could maybe be playing on another team in the future, but they do have Terry, big breakout player this year. And they do have Trevor Zegras, who seems to be like the crown jewel in terms of, you know, excitement around the league among the youngest players. So I do think that's something that will eventually materialize for Anaheim. I think that the Pacific Division is not that good outside of Calgary, right? So even moving forward, so you'll be looking at the Ducks and the Kings really making upward movement in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned earlier, the pathway is just there for the Vancouver Canucks to naturally progress and turn things around quickly. And I feel the same way about the Anaheim Ducks. You know, since we're talking about goaltending, like, I do think John Gibson is a trade candidate. And that's more so because of Lucas Dostal, who I think is ready to be in the NHL. We've seen it at bits and pieces throughout this season, spent the majority of the campaign in the American Hockey League. So that's another, you know, I would say deep sleeper in between the pipes to look at is Lucas Dostal. Of the Anaheim Ducks, because I think they're obviously looking for that next wave, but they got some bets on that roster too. And then most importantly, the pathway to get back into thick of things in the Pacific right away.
Yeah. And we have six goaltenders in our top 100 keeper ranking. So we got Spencer Knight. We got Jake Ottinger, who's under 25. We have Jeremy Swayman, who's had a nice start to his career. Carter Hart, obviously less high on him because it's the state of the team, but still needs to be mentioned, still fits that qualification. UPL, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen for the Buffalo Sabres. And then kind of a hidden gem that has emerged down the stretch for the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't know that there's been a more disappointing goaltender in the league than Robin Leonard this year. I know that injuries have played a part in it, but Logan Thompson obviously has done an amazing job in the small sample size that he has, and he's 25 and under as well. So maybe if Vegas has to shift away from some of these moves they've made, at least they have a young goaltender, right, Nick, that has some upside here.
What a pleasant surprise. And I put this on Twitter the last couple of weeks. Where would this Vegas Golden Knights team be without Logan Thompson? Probably still missing the playoffs for that matter. But I think he's been a tremendous story and much needed at that, because I think you're still right, especially when you're a cap-strapped team like the Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm very curious to see what they do here in the offseason. Again, similar to the Boldy conversation, you need sort of these cheaper options. And Pete, more importantly, if you can get that in between the pipes, that's just so much value exponentially for this organization to maybe tandem with a Robin Leonard moving forward. And you hope Leonard has a better season next year. So I like that Logan Thompson look. Okay, I think a lot of people are looking past it because Vegas has been such a polarizing story over the last couple of weeks. But at the very least, somebody I would have on my watch list moving forward.
Yeah, and at record time, he's got a 920 save percentage and one shutout in his first 15 NHL games. So a nice start to his NHL career after playing the earlier part of the season in Henderson. And then last thing, I think we could wrap with this, Nick. There have been some guys around the league, whether it's Kaapo Kakko, Kirby Dach, even an older guy, like I know Besser for the most part of the season has been underwhelming. Matthew Barzal has fallen back in our keeper rankings. You know, do you have a lot of patience with these guys? I know in dynasty leagues, you have to have patience with them because you're locked into them. That's what you know you're getting yourself into. But like, how trigger happy would you be with, you know, kind of dealing these guys, trading them, you know, or would you be patient with like a player like Kirby Dach? Because right now, Dach is not playing for a contending team and his production has been lacking so far in his career for being such a high pick.
Yeah, and don't forget, like, it takes two to tangle in an offseason trade when it comes to fantasy hockey. So if you feel a certain way about a player, chances are the guy you're trying to, the guy or girl you're trying to trade with feels the same way about the file. I think for the most part, a lot of these guys like Doc, I think you hold on to, you hope for the best. And maybe they have that come to me moment where they figure things out. It's happened so many times in this NHL world where somebody just breaks out randomly. And I would identify a group of players, Kirby Doc's in that conversation, where I'm taking late flyers in my draft. If you're a non-keepers, but even in keepers where a lot of people just don't have the patience, want to let these guys go, I would take late flyers. And I think you're bound to hit on a couple of these guys, Pete. I don't know if you have the same mentality, but I do think you can find a lot of value late in your keeper drafts too.
Even you were mentioning Vasily Podkolzin, another one we've mentioned in the past, Arthur Kaliev. Kaliev leading all rookies in shots on goal this season, despite playing on mostly a third line role. I would rather invest in someone like that, like Podkolzin or Kaliev, that we haven't quite seen their reps in the top six, where we've seen it a bunch of times from a number of those guys that we just mentioned, Kako when he's been healthy, and you know the story there by now. But yeah, I'm more excited for the untapped potential in keeper and dynasty leagues than I am with the guys that have been like up and down, tumultuous a little bit, and maybe trending in the wrong direction. So thanks again to Cam Robinson for hopping on, Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen. We'll be back at you next week to wrap up the 2021-22 season. Crazy that it's been, we're at the end of the road here, but we're going to be keeping it going in the playoffs, right, Nick?
Exactly. And don't forget to pick aside your best suit. We'll be unveiling our award winners next week. So stay tuned for that, Pete Jensen and Bob Bender.
And I hear Bobby's going to chime in a little bit once we get to the playoffs with his best leanings for the postseason.
Lucky us.
So really looking forward to that as well. So for Bender, Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, talk to you next week. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for listening. Leave us a review, comment, shows on YouTube. You know the drill by now. If you have won your fantasy league, send us a tweet. We'll give you a retweet, and we'll see you on the other side. Thanks for listening.